The work I'll be recounting here is apropos the talk Colin just gave, at least one dimension of his talk, which is how can we think about getting comprehensive pictures of censorship activity. Here it's going to be regarding the Great Firewall and China's censorship of DNS. So that's obviously just a subset of what China does, but certainly an important one. The authors believe they need to remain anonymous to avoid any sort of reprisal. So as program co-chair, I'm giving this talk for them. So the general framing here is the Great Firewall, while it has seen a lot of study and even more sort of chatter and informal discussion in blogosphere, et cetera, we don't really know comprehensively how to talk about it. In some ways, that's not even a well-defined notion because it changes, as Colin was just saying. Over time, its properties are going to evolve. The researchers set out to think about several dimensions. You know, what is the policy it's trying to achieve? Which sites does it block? How does it implement that, and where does it cite those devices used to implement it? How well does that work? And ultimately, what one would like, though this is not a theme of the paper, is what does that mean in terms of structural vulnerabilities, say, for, okay, if we would like to circumvent it, make its life hard, what would we do? The target in particular for the Great Firewall, as I mentioned, is its DNS injection. So it has been well established, and the work in the paper confirms this, that the way that this works is there are devices that are passively monitoring network traffic as it flies by, looking for requests that are prohibited, and will forge a response back to the client that made the request, typically pointing it to a specific IP address. So the client will receive that before it receives the legitimate reply. It'll actually see both if, under normal circumstances. And so this is actually pretty easy to verify. Oh yeah, that's an injection. The going for DNS as a measurement, right? So keep in mind the broader notion of what does it mean to comprehensively measure, and how methodologically do we go after it? DNS is attractive in this regard because it's a lightweight stateless protocol, which means you can generate scans of it at scale quite easily. Finally, it turns out, and this is not known a priori going into the research, that the implementation used by China leaks information, and that allows additional inference. And that's a general theme we often find measurement at scale, is that there's serendipity. You find facets of the system that are not intended to be there that can be leveraged for inference. All right, so focusing on particular analyses, and these are things that will be touched on as I go through the work, what is it the sensor's banning? And so methodologically, how do we do that, right? There's hundreds of millions of websites out there. How are we going to find out? We would ideally like a comprehensive list. This is it. This is all the stuff, right? So how do we do that methodologically? And then is the sensor doing this point-wise? Like, okay, I dislike these 911 sites, and so there's a rule for all of them, or are there more general rules that are applied? How broadly is censorship affected? Are there parts of China that have it and parts that don't? Where is it happening? And that's going to be related to how pervasive is the coverage. Does it fail? Does it either not work and so somebody can get to something even though the technology has been deployed? How often does that happen? Or does it fail in that it blocks something it shouldn't have blocked? And all in all, can we somehow estimate what is the volume of traffic censored? So all of these points, I'm going to go through the methodology to tackle them and the results. And the degree to which the answer is comprehensive varies, though for most of them, it is pretty comprehensive, as I'll be arguing from these slides. OK, so first off, methodology. One can break down doing this measurement in Okay, does a given domain trigger censorship? If so, does it get censored along a particular path? All right, so there's a notion, is it bad? Is it bad, is it effectively blocked along this path? And if so, and a path is somewhere, typically somewhere inside China and somewhere outside, that we'll also talk about paths wholly inside China. If so, where on the path? So that's what we want to achieve. And the authors employed four techniques for doing this. One was to send DNS requests to addresses inside China where there are no DNS servers. So nothing should come back from such requests. Another is in DNS requests to ask for domains that do not exist. A third is to do this sort of stuff of trace route-like probing, where you vary the time to live, and therefore you can tell, hey, I get an injection if I go 15 hops, you know, from here, but I don't if I go 14. Therefore, the injector is 15 hops from where I was measuring. And finally, doing indirect scanning between open resolvers inside China. So this is this clever measurement trick from a paper for a system called King from a while ago, where using the right DNS, glue, goop, et cetera, you can get one open resolver, A, to make requests to another open resolver, B, and therefore find out what does B tell A. What's useful for these techniques is that, in general, they should only elicit replies from the injector itself. There's no benign replies here that are going to occur. So that makes the analysis simpler. Okay, so let's go to the first point. How pervasively is censorship deployed? And the methodology here is, from a system inside China, find 150,000 open resolvers. And this is found by just brute force scanning through all of Chinese address space looking for open resolvers. So find 150,000 of them and look up known censored domains over and over across 2 weeks. Doing this, only one in 1,000 of the resolvers queried did not get back a polluted response. So that says these open resolvers, which now keep in mind what's happening is we are asking some system from China, we're asking a system in China to look up a name, but it's going to go outside China to look up that name. So this does not mean necessarily that the blocking is occurring inside China. It could be at the border, and we'll come back to that point in just a minute. 99.9% seems like a lot, but it's not 100%. And so there are actually about 80 resolvers that don't get monkeyed with. These are interesting. So how does that happen? Well, some of them tunnel their request to Google or OpenDNS. And the methodology for determining that is looking up through them domains under the control of the author. So they say, where does the actual request for that lookup come from? Oh, it comes from Google's IP space. Some of them have filtering done on the IP addresses selected by the Great Firewall to inject. So one can test for this by have them make a query from a domain under the author's control, and the answer happens to be an A record with that banned IP address, and no reply will come back from the open resolver because it's dropping that answer. Finally, one of them appears to just live a life free of censorship. And it's not clear exactly how it's pulling that off, but it is cited in an internet exchange point. May or may not have something to do with its topological position there, may have to do with something administrative about it, unknown. All right, so this is answering the pervasiveness question, which is very pervasive, not completely airtight. Now, where are the injectors or nodes, the Great Firewall nodes doing the injection? So I mentioned earlier using traceroute-like hop limiting to send probes along, and here you see A from our measurement source, we send a TTL1, it only gets to A, and then TTL2 to B, and then a TTL3 to C, and once we use that TTL3, back comes the injected response along with later the legitimate response. So, okay, the injector is three hops away from the sender. An important methodological consideration here is how error can skew this. So, and this occurred with between 0.5% to 2% of the probing. What happens is either the reply injected by C gets dropped, or perhaps the probe even got lost, just did a packet loss. So if you're measuring this, then you're just doing the natural algorithm of 1, 2, 3, then the next thing you do is you send out 4, and that goes by C. C injects a response, and it's easy to misattribute it to saying, oh, it's 4 away, not 3 away. So I mentioned this as a consideration in interpreting, okay, exactly how many injectors are there and where are they located. It gets harder in the presence of noisy measurement like this due to loss. Okay, so now we have methodology to find out where they are. Let's go for it. Take all the 24s in China. So that's about more than a million slash 24s, and probe them. Probe them from a server outside China. That's definitely going to go across the border, and from two places inside China. The server outside, 80% of the 24s would receive injected replies. These came from apparently 7,000 different interfaces inside. The locations are all in Chinese border autonomous systems, not internal. And generally, 2 or 3 hops from when the probe reaches China. This says that those are being injected by systems not sited right at the cable head, but not far from it. Internally, a minority of the measurements get injection, much, much less. And when they do, it's coming from the same location as the other. Now, that internal finding is interesting, and the authors drilled down into it by taking 207 open resolvers and mesh measuring between them to see which of them have censorship between them. And of the 40,000 paths between them, only 18 of them had any injection. Now, so if we put this together, it paints the picture. DNS injection is happening on the edge of China's network. It's not happening internal. This is different than some findings in previous studies which have found censorship occurring inside China in the interior. Could be it varies from DNS versus other types of censorship. Could be it changed. Could be there are methodological issues with one or the other. Good question. It looks likely, plausible from these measurements, that when traffic that stays inside China gets disrupted, it's simply because by happenstance it happened to go by a border. Its route, the route from A to B, happened to go by a border AS and by the injector for that. But it was not arguably intended by the architecture of the injection. Injection is intended to be at the edge. Okay, now, how do we figure out what's being blocked? Now, this is not comprehensive, but it's getting there, the methodology that's used. So first, take 4 zones from TLDs, .com, info, org, and net, and then take the Alexa top 1 million. That's 130 million domains. And then try them. Look them all up. And when you do that, you find about 35,000 are censored. So obviously, there's more still. Where's .cn and where's are you, and you know, all these others, but this is a stab at scale well beyond what was been explored before. In addition, once you have something censored, it's interesting to understand the nature of the rule that led to the censoring. Let me illustrate that. So here's, this is an actual example. www.hunwas.info, hunwas.info, that's censored. So now the methodology is to use binary search to find out which piece of that is the injector unhappy with. So for example, split it in two and try just the right-hand side. That's also censored. Now split that in two and try it. And nope, not censored, not censored, not censored. Therefore, one can conclude the rule is WAS.info is censored. And then one can do try variants to the left of it, and sure enough, this is a suffix rule. So anything ending in that string gets censored. And in fact, arguably, this is a complete collateral damage, not even meant to be censored. Just that the suffix rule doesn't even enforce that there's a dot. How many such rules are there? About 15,000. And the paper catalogs exactly the nature of the suffixes, and it turns out it's complicated. There's several different types, patterns. So most of these keywords are either suffixes or substring. Anywhere in the name at all will get censored. Okay, so that's the policy. I've done pervasiveness and the policy. Let me go on to the individual injectors. One thing the authors noticed is that the responses have deterministic patterns. And these are in essentially side channel fields in the injection. So when you inject, you gotta fill out all the fields. And two of them are the IPID and the time to live that you start with. Neither one does your value really matter in terms of the efficacy of your injection, except you can't pick a tiny TTL or the injection won't get to the client. So what I've plotted here is for one particular injector, if you continually send the same exact request, back comes monotone increasing TTLs, that's the red line, and they're indexed on the left-hand side of the plot. And this funky pattern of IPIDs, including that lovely little loop in those. So every point on, every packet here has two points, one red, which is its TTL, one blue, which is its IPID. So you can see that it's a pretty striking pattern. Clearly, there's a trivial incrementing algorithm for the TTL, and there's some funky, who knows what algorithm, probably some math geek in the audience has already figured it out, but that's generating the IPIDs. This turns out to be useful. So, you know, you build these injectors, and we know when you build high-speed monitoring, you're going to load balance that sucker. You can't just gobble up, you know, a 10-gig stream or something with a Linux box. You know, you're going to need a whole lot of Linux boxes or whatever you're using. So the authors tried that. Okay, what is the load balancing based on? And you can imagine it might be based on various things, IP addresses, ephemeral port, your own TTL and IPID, your DNS query, all those things are fodder for any hash function that might be splitting up traffic across a bunch of nodes. Most of them, you can vary them, and you still get replies from the exact same injector. However, if for a particular source IP or destination IP, you see a pattern like this, and then you vary either the source or the destination, then you see that. So the algorithm is clearly sending the traffic to two different processes depending on some sort of hash on source and destination address, and arguably nothing else. Let me just repeat that because I know that plot's a little funky. So if you change your source or IP address and then repeatedly measure with exactly that same probe, you'll get either the red set of points or the blues. And you can tell that the blues are just operating off a different algorithm than the reds, a different parameterization of the algorithm, because the values are different. They're spread out spatially. Okay, there's also then the possibility of tying together what might be seemingly different injectors and realize they're the same ones. This is done by taking a measurement sender and picking two paths that are near each other, but not the same exact destination address, and send alternate probes between them. And if what you get back is a stream of TTLs that are interleaved, in other words, the combination of the two makes up one of those previous patterns, not two distinct patterns, then you can say, aha, that's one injector process. There's one injector that's looking at both of those in injector. Now, what the authors wanted to do here is then figure out, okay, what does it take to run one of these injectors? Are you running three processes? Are you running 1,000? And they were not able to get the exact, oh, here is the algorithm. You know, compute this hash, mod it by that, and then pick it. But they came somewhat close, and they did it as follows. They picked one particular AS. So this measurement is just for that AS. It's not comprehensive cross-term. Find where's the locator. So, okay, where's the injector? So if you send traffic past that point, it's going to tickle that injector. And then feed it traffic with different destinations that will all go along that path. And then one poor collaborator, co-author, sat down and looked through all the different patterns to determine how many different patterns are there. Those visual patterns I showed earlier. And in doing so, scanning 2,000 destinations, out came 367 patterns. So that is evidence that that measured node likely has 367 threads processing its analysis burden. Could be multiple boxes. Probably at that level, you're not going to get any benefit doing that in a single box. So presumably a bunch of boxes. One could, in principle, and it would be illuminating to do this, just then now do this across all of China and put together the entire picture for it. That has not been done in this work. However, another piece of the work suggests that it would be illuminating to do that and fun. And this is estimating, okay, how much work does that poor box have to do? How many requests are going on? So to do this, the measurement methodology is take pairs of the same probe that's going to get injected responses, and you're not, let me get this right. You're sending a whole bunch of these, but you track which ones will be served by the same process. And for those, over 1 second, say, you look at how much does that TTL advance. And remember, the TTL advances in this very simple increment it until it wraps and then go around. And so, like we've seen before on IPID hacks, actually, you can then say, okay, well, it was, you know, 12 the first time and it was 19 the second time, so there must have been 7 in between me. So that particular injector thread had 7 others that it injected in between mine. And mine were 1 second apart, so it's doing 7 a second. You do the math, and you get the node, this is all of its threads together, is doing around 2,800 requests per second. In this particular one, again, this is just measuring one. This is not the comprehensive view. And what's nice to confirm is that the injections per second follows the diurnal you would expect for activity in China. So the axis here is China time and has the normal, you know, hey, middle of the night, not much happens pattern that we always see on diurnals. Okay, let me summarize the work. So the authors took this, you know, already pretty well-studied censorship edifice and undertook to try to very thoroughly map out one facet of its behavior and found a number of interesting things. It is not airtight, though it is close. Things fail, and the failure rate is not negligible. So this means, you know, now and then it's just going to work for our user, 1 or 2% of the time. It appears, at least for this one AS injector that was probed, that the injector employs a few hundred processes. The policy is at least 35,000 domains. That's taken from that 130 million list. And based on these keywords, 15,000 keywords, and because the keywords are used in a somewhat clumsy suffix or substring fashion, there's collateral damage just due to the sloppiness of the matching. Topologically, the injection's happening at the edge. Few hops in from the edge, not in internal, which is different than other views we've had on China's deployment. One can fingerprint the injectors based on their implementation quirks, and that then allows inferring the load balancing and the overall rate. Now, those I'll reiterate that the load balancing and the rate numbers are for one sample. That's not a comprehensive number. So, I wrote here on this slide, it says unnecessary features made the study possible. And I asked the authors in particular what they had in mind there. And it's both that they have these quirks like IP, ID, and TTL, but also that China doesn't care what direction you're going in. So you could do a whole lot of this measurement from outside the US into China, and it still all works. So that feature is really nice. That's very handy. And then they said it was fun, so there you go. And then finally, I think it's useful just to think about this in terms of, okay, you know, let's get more ambitious in our measurement. How can we tackle these sort of comprehensive illumination and reverse engineering? So finally, this is their email address, and this caveat is that some queries may go unanswered because they've got to do OPSEC essentially on whether someone is trying to identify them. I'm done. I don't know if I'll be able to answer questions or not, but let me know and I'll try, or I can relay them. Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to remember. There's stuff in the paper, and some parts of it were done for a few weeks, and some of it is much more longitudinal, and I'm not going to remember the various pieces, but it should be in the paper.
Do they give any indication
about
how many such notes there are?
About what?
About how many such notes there are. So you presented.
Yeah, right. I don't believe the notes are quantified. So, no, let me back up. So there is a number, which is there are several thousand distinct injectors in terms of where measurement sort of pointed to. However, that's clouded by this question of essentially false positives due to loss. And so in the paper, there's a statement, it seems plausible the number is in the few hundreds of locations. Yeah.
Why does the legitimate DNS reply come back?
Why? What?
I said, why does the legitimate DNS reply?
Why do they not?
Why do they? On the slide, it showed the legitimate DNS return.
Oh, because this is injection, right? You're not in the path. So you can't stop for those measurements that went to an actual server. Like, so if you're doing the King measurement, it'll come. You're right. In the plot, I should have not shown the replies because it's actually going to a dead address. Just seems sort of simpler. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is the first time I see this very complete and solid research, especially give us locate those DNS one of our anti-blocking efforts is we identify the signature of the retained IP and also the TTL, and we can simply ignore the first the injected response and wait for the second. That seems working most of the time.
Yeah. So that's in general, and there was a paper in SAP where we thought about an approach along these lines, where, you know, if you're injecting, you can, it has a clear signature, and if you can just wait a little while, then you can ignore the injection. But, you know, for any system, there's no way to rule